This episode of Discover ADN is brought to you by Born SQL. Randolph West at Born SQL is offering to take a look at your existing Microsoft SQL Server database instances and make detailed and specific recommendations to bring your mission-critical infrastructure up to industry standards. Included in the report are recommendations on upgrades, maintenance plans, disaster recovery, performance, and best practice improvements at both a hardware and software level. Naturally, Randolph can also assist an on-site person to look after your databases or work his magic remotely. To make this offer even more tempting, he's providing a 30% discount to listeners of Discover ADN. Interested? Contact Randolph West via email at info@bornsql.ca with the keyword Discover in the subject line. Welcome to episode 5 of Discover ADN. My name is Jason Irwin, and I am the host of this program. The goal of Discover ADN is to learn more about the many creative, intelligent, and interesting people that use app.net to communicate with the world, as well as offer us a chance to attach a voice to the words and avatars we see flowing through our timelines. Want to be in the show or recommend somebody you think is interesting? Get in touch on app.net by sending a message to discoveradn. Today, I have the pleasure of talking with Damon Welch Abernathy, who goes by the pseudonym Phoneboy on app.net. He's a world traveler with a keen eye on software security and has achieved a level of fame in his line of work that few of us could ever dream of earning. Now, before we get into the program, I would like to apologize in advance for some of the audio quality. Damon was in Israel staying at a hotel when we recorded this program, and so occasionally the sound does get a little Skypey, but it does get better near the end. So please join me in welcoming Damon to Discover ADN. Hello!
Howdy.
All right, so today I understand you're in Israel. What brings you out there?
For work. So I work for Checkpoint Software Technologies. The home office is in Tel Aviv. I come out here fairly regularly, actually. Normally, you would find me in the Seattle area of the United States. So it's very different climates, very different, it's very different atmosphere. And I like the differences, actually. I mean, that's one of the things I enjoy about when I travel for work is encountering different cultures, different ways of existing, I think it promotes more worldwide understanding, which is something we could all use a little bit more of. I think
we certainly could. Well, thank you for chatting with me today, and before breakfast too.
And before breakfast, yes, I've had a little bit of coffee at least.
Well,
so I'm
that's
good.
A good thing. All right, so let me ask you the very first question: when did you join App.net?
I joined. I think I was in the group of people that came on after NetBot came on as an application. That being the ADN version of TweetBot, which is a very popular Twitter application. We're looking at, I think, October 2012 is when I joined. And I think the other thing that spurred me on too is that they reduced the joining fee from $30 for $50 to $36. I said, okay, seems like now is a good time to join. So, actually, I think maybe I came before that wave. I think that was what caused me to join was it dropped to $36, and then after that, TweetBot came about, or NetBot came about, and sort of the rest is history.
So, why did you join App.net?
Well, being a tech douchebag of sorts and liking to be able to use my own way of accessing a social networking service and being able to use and be able to see it differently and use different things, I noticed that Twitter, who had been using since the beginning, right, when there was no mobile clients and it was all SMS or the website, that the ecosystem that Twitter was building was they were essentially shutting it down and making it so that you had to use the official Twitter experience experiences to use and enjoy Twitter. And I think it's primarily because the business model is different, right? It's Twitter makes its money off of advertising, which means that we are a product, right? And not really we're not really the users of the service. We are the product that is being sold to somebody else. So I kind of looked at that and went, I want to hedge my bets, right? And so I saw this app.net thing and I went, okay, well, I want to follow this because I like the idea of, you know, essentially social networking infrastructure. I love that idea. And I love that there are different ways of using this service. And so once there was enough there, I went, okay. And the cost was reasonable. I said, okay, I will join this service. And I found that I met a lot of really interesting people, a lot of really creative people, such as yourself. And so I'm able, even though it's a much smaller audience, right? I'm able to have much more interesting conversations on a much more diverse set of topics. And you know, because the app.net community was small, right? It was actually easy to find people, and that's something that on Twitter, right? Once it reached a certain critical mass, trying to build a new following and find people on Twitter is just impossible, right? So the only reason I followed 900 people now is because over time I've over 7 years I've built that number of people. But am I really interacting with 900 people? No, I'm not. I'm probably interacting with a very small subset of them. And the same is true on app.net, right? I mean, I follow a lot of people and I can only interact with so many people. But what's kept me on app.net and why I continue to pay the $36 a year is the community of developers and users. And there's bad apples in some situations, but it's been pretty good for me. And I enjoy the people I communicate with. I enjoy the different applications that the different developers have developed. I wish I could see some more apps on platforms other than iOS, but generally speaking, it's been it's a very diverse group of people, and you know, I'm hoping that I can use your podcast to learn about a few more people because the thing is that we're not all A-list, B-list, or even C-list people, right? We're all just people, and we'd like to communicate and be heard and expand our worldview, and that's what I hope and that's what I'm continuing to find on app.net is that, yeah, there's a lot of techie people on there, but I'm meeting, you know, like some of the artists and stuff that I know you're planning to interview or have interviewed. So I think it's a fascinating cross section of the world, as it were.
Well, I hope you find a lot of new interesting people through this podcast as well.
Oh, absolutely. That's why I'm participating. I mean, you know, I'm just one of many of the people on app.net, right? But I don't claim to represent app.net in any way, shape, or form other than just being a user and I want to get more people on it. But I also realize that part of what makes it cool right now is because it's small. It's actually easy to find people to an extent. It's much more difficult, I think, on say a service like Twitter, which is they're closing down a lot of a lot of the innovation there, and I think that's a shame. But that's whereas app.net is still very much an open playground, and you know, I like to see what other people come up with.
All right, you use a pseudonym on app.net. Can you tell us where PhoneBoy comes from?
It's a very simple story, actually. So back in the 1990s, I worked briefly on a radio program about the internet. And you know, back in the 90s, the internet was just becoming a mainstream phenomenon. I mean, I got involved in the internet actually in the late 80s, and back then it was Unix command line and Usenet and that kind of stuff. There was no World Wide Web to speak of. Gopher may have been an option back then, but it was still fairly it wasn't something that was in the mainstream. You know, maybe in academia you knew about it, but beyond that it was not something most people knew about. And then in the 90s, I was going to college at the time, and I got to experience the NCSA Mosaic and Mozilla web browsers of the day in the World Wide Web was like in its very nascent phases. But I got to use it on these big Unix terminal Unix machines with big color screens, and so I got to I kind of got to see the very early parts of the internet that became mainstream. And so anyway, in the 90s, so I I found a local radio station that was airing this program called RadioNet, and I was a call screener on this program for several months. And the very early on, the host, who I'm actually still friends with, he called me the phone boy because he couldn't remember my name, and I just said, okay, well, that sounds like a good nickname. I knew this guy, and I figured I couldn't live the name down anyway, so I figured I might as well just embrace it and move on. And so, you know, nearly 20 years later, I'm using it for pretty much everything I'm doing. And so it's and then, you know, there's some other history that goes along with that name that might be, may or may not be interesting. But I started working with the Checkpoint firewall product back in that time frame as well, and I had developed an FAQ for that site or for that product, and I put it on phoneboy.com. And so there was no real good source of information for the Checkpoint product, not even from Checkpoint back in those days. And so I built this site that became synonymous with Checkpoint, and there's an employment history there that actually where I spent 10 years at Nokia, where they had a division that had these hardware responses that were the Checkpoint.
And let's pause right there for a moment. So as you could tell, Skype was not cooperating at this point in time. So to save your ears, let's continue from the next question. What would you like to see more of on app.net?
I would, you know, more people. I mean, as much as I enjoy the people that I've discovered on app.net, I'd like to see more people on it. I mean, I think it's a hard value proposition to articulate to people, because there are so many other places where one could hang their hat. And so that's been a challenge that app.net has had, and they've tried to diversify out of the microblogging thing. And they had to do microblogging initially because that was the minimum viable product back in the day. You know, now they've got some other, you know, they've got this broadcast feature and they've essentially turned it into email, which is, you know, okay, that might be a product that keeps app.net alive. But as far as the app.net microblogging community, it may not necessarily grow that. So I would like to see more people use the microblogging. And but again, there's so many other people on Twitter and other places that it's just it's a harder sell, right? I mean, yeah, this got some nicer features, but there's been a lot of attempts at replicating the Twitter-like experience or even the Facebook-like experience, and they've been, you know, less successful. I mean, I think it would take, you know, Twitter doing something really, really stupid for a bunch of people to just like leave it in a mass exodus, or, you know, new shiny. So I would like to, so I want to see more people using the microblogging, but I also am looking forward to seeing just like, I don't know, other things that the app.net folks are coming up with to expand the service. And maybe there's some new way of doing this that's not microblogging, that's even better, right? And we don't know that yet. So I'm looking for more uses for app.net because, you know, I want to continue to give them $36 a year, but if the service stagnates, then maybe I'll drop down to the freemium, right? And I've seen people do that because, you know, they said, you know, it's, I don't want to pay $36 a year for microblogging. So I can get that for free now. So I'm just going to, you know, I'll just drop down to free and following 40, which I know several people that have done that. So,
okay, let's change gears just a little bit. Can you tell us, what would you like to be known for?
I'll tell you what I am known for. sometimes I'm known for snarky commentary on the interwebs, but then, you know, I think everybody's known for that to an extent. I have an association with Checkpoint, and so I've been doing and being a font of knowledge there. But I guess at the end of the day, right, I'm just some guy, and I try not to put too much importance on anything that I'm doing. And, you know, as much as I would love to see other people do what listen to my own podcast or something. But you know, I'm a guy with a diverse set of opinions and a worldview that's I don't know what I would be known for, you know, what I'd like to be known for. But I as I say, I've been known as somebody associated with checkpoint, I've known as somebody that's helpful and knowledgeable about a variety of topics, not just things, you know, related to checkpoint, but, you know, things like mobile phones and computers and stuff. I just like helping people out. I mean, that's at the end of the day, when you, if you break down a lot of the stuff that I've done on the interwebs, it's been stuff that's helpful, and that, and to, you know, to try and help people understand, you know, this one little part of the world that's very complex. So that's what I guess I'd like to be known for, is just being a helpful, knowledgeable guy.
Your bio says that you are an InfoSec celebrity. How did this come to pass?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, I had built this name by sheer accident, right? I had built up this this FAQ site about the Checkpoint products, and as a result, right, this is back in the early days of the Checkpoint product that's been out, the Checkpoint has been a company with products out on the market for at least 20 years now, and so I have this association with, as being somebody who knows something about Checkpoint, and putting the information out there on the web at a time when that wasn't happening as much. But, you know, certainly Checkpoint itself wasn't doing it, although since then things have changed quite a lot, and even I participate in doing that now, in a more formal basis. But this is again me being a helpful guy to people on the interwebs about some part of the world, and so when I go talk with customers, or long-time Checkpoint customers, or people that have who work in the information security industry, and I mentioned the name, or somebody mentions the name PhoneBoy, there's invariably somebody in the room that says, "Oh yeah, that was the, you know, that was the website that had all the Checkpoint stuff on it." And even today, right, I will I was having dinner at a Japanese restaurant here in Israel, and I was having dinner by myself, and I was just looking, eating sushi or whatever, and I heard somebody mention Checkpoint in the restaurant, and so I walked over, and because there's invariably a lot of people from that are working for Checkpoint around here, that are visiting and such, and so I ran into somebody that I hadn't met before from another office, and I mentioned PhoneBoy, and I don't usually make a big deal about it, but he said, "Oh, you're PhoneBoy," you know, and so it's like people know who know about PhoneBoy, or at least, you know, in this small circle of information security people, and there's some people that don't, right? So I joke that I'm a C-list information security celebrity because people know who I am from the 90s and early 2000s. So that's where the information celebrity comes from, or information security celebrity comes from. Some people know who PhoneBoy is in that context, and I'm not famous like Bruce Schneier or one of these guys that's well known, right? So there's a certain segment of the population that knows who I am, and that's okay, right? And it's afforded me some interesting experiences as a result.
It's always nice when other people recognize the things that you have done.
Well, absolutely, and that's, you know, I think at the end of the day, right, it's one thing to be helpful, but it's another thing for somebody to recognize that you've been helpful. So I do appreciate that, and I'm still humbled by it. I'm like, it's like, God, I did this like more than 20, you know, I started this thing more than, almost 20 years ago. And I did it because it was to scratch my own itch. And I built this site that people are still remembering today. And I mean, one of the secondary reasons I did it is because, hey, it's a walking resume. Look, what better proof that I know what I'm talking about with this Checkpoint product than having this corpus of knowledge that I've shared with the internet, right? And yes, it served me well, right? And you can still find find versions of this site on the Wayback Machine and stuff. So,
aside from being an InfoSec celebrity and being known as PhoneBoy, do you have any other hobbies or pastimes that you enjoy?
It's weird because I spend so much time on the interwebs that in working and such when I'm not doing any of those things, it's mostly just doing the stuff that you have to do to live life, you know, things like cleaning the house, trying to raise my children, and other things. I enjoy The one thing that's listed on my profile is that I'm an American football fan, specifically of the 49ers. I'm originally from the San Francisco Bay Area, and I grew up in the 1980s. That was when the 49ers were doing really, really well. So it's one of those, sports is one of those irrational things. It's almost kind of like religion, and I don't want to be controversial here, but there's a belief in something, right? Whether, it's something that's outside of yourself, whether it be a god or a certain way of thinking, and there's a certain amount of faith that I guess that goes with it, or in some cases it's blind, right? And it's like, I know that there's nothing I can do to change what the football team does, right? It's a complete fantasy to say, oh, I believe they're going to win, right? And it's because there's nothing I can do to change that. It's just entertainment like everything else on television. But it's something I enjoy watching because it's a very complex, nuanced game that it's very physical. But it's definitely fun to watch. And I think it was also like my son was playing football these last several years, and so I got to see it a little more up close and personal. And so my appreciation for the game has only gotten better. My understanding of what's going on now is even a little bit more nuanced because I've watched my son practice for several years. So yes, I enjoy the sports ball, but that's really American football is really the only sports ball game I enjoy, maybe a little bit of basketball, but that's just, I've not found any sport that I've enjoyed more. And there was a time I wanted to play it, but I'm a bit old for that now. So I'll just enjoy watching it on television. It's the one sort of mainstream, entertainment thing that I can say that I enjoy. But living in Seattle, of course I'm hearing about the Seahawks more, but that's fine, right? I don't take it personally. It's just something on television that's entertaining and it brings people together in various ways. But it's fascinating to just look at the psychology of it and the fans and the players and such. So I think there's a lot to be learned from there, but to me, it seems like there's not too many differences between that and say religion.
I know a lot of people who would argue that until the end of the earth.
Yeah, and I don't really want to. And again, I may be wrong, right? I mean, it's just sort of my take on it, and I don't really want to get into a conversational debate about it. I look at it, and it is, yeah. I think that's But there are people that take their sports as seriously as they would take going to church. Insert name of your favorite deity here. So it's fascinating to watch that. That dynamic play out and see it. And so I have to take a step back and go, yeah, I'm maybe not as hardcore as some of these other people, but I enjoy my team, right? There's a good legacy there, and it's fun to watch and be a part of something that's greater than yourself. And so there's this family of sports fans, right? And the church is on Sunday. It's just instead of going to a place, and maybe in some cases you do go to a place, but it's not a church. It's a bar where you watch the game. I mean, you start looking at the similarities between church and watching American football or any other sport. There's a lot of similarities there, and it's kind of fascinating that we find all of these ways to sort of come together and for something that is outside of ourselves.
Yeah, I can completely agree with that. And yeah, there's no problem getting right into sports. I know I have a lot of family members who are exactly the same way.
Yeah. And people do it, right? And as I said, I figure I could be this isolated geek and not care much about the mainstream stuff. And I pick and choose, right? It's like, okay, it's football, something I understand. So I can at least have a conversation with people about it. And it's not app.net or mobile phones or something. It's something that more people can relate to. So because there is a lot of things that one could be, nerdy about. And so I can't be nerdy about everything, so I pick and choose. And there's just some things I'm just not interested in, and so I don't pretend to be. I'll have conversations with people about anything, but at some point I'm just, I don't really care about that. It's not interesting. But I think it is nice to have that world, have the world view of what other people are interested in and find out why they're interested in it and how that's similar to other things that other people might be interested in. And there's some interesting similarities and differences with all of those things.
Well, I will admit, sometimes I do envy you. Being able to get right into a sport, I think talking sports with people would help me appear as less of a geek.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it's, so I think you don't have to be in the sports, though. I mean, I think there's probably other things you could be involved in that are interesting. But it's, yeah, I know to people who make the sports ball jokes, right? It's because it's what it sounds like. It's, go red, go blue, right? And actually, that's a funny thing, right? You're not rooting for, you're rooting for the jersey, right? Because like players in the NFL, right, will change teams every year because their contracts expire and the team can't pay them so much because they have salary caps and stuff, and so they move these players around. And so, you know, this person that you thought was a really cool player, now you're rooting against that player the next week because now they're playing for the other team. So you are literally rooting for the shirts. and somebody stated it that way, and I went, yeah, you're right. You know, it's exactly what we're doing. And I know psychologically it's just BS, but it is it's just fascinating that we all do that, that at least, you know, sports fans do that. And I'm sure there's, you know, everybody has their own version of, you know, like, the, you know, we see the same kind of a religious fervor goes into debating whether, you know, Apple or, you know, Android is better, or, you know, you go back 20 years and VI versus Emacs, right? It's the same sort of, you know, illogical debate that just occurs. It's like I'm justifying my point of view, and I'm trying to rationalize it, but I think this is better, and you know, I don't want to even entertain the other point of view, right? And that's and I see this play out time and time again. No matter, pick your topic, there's always somebody that's going to be like religiously for it and religiously against it, and it's just, you know. And so, yeah, and then fortunately that dynamic plays out on app.net also. But it's no different than any other form of conversation. It happens on Facebook and Twitter and such as well.
Absolutely. And I think it's good that we are able to see some of these conversations, because somebody who has a strong opinion about something can sometimes make a very good point, which we can take away and use that to balance other counterpoints. And I think that's a very valuable experience.
Well, absolutely. It's like we talked about earlier. I having that balanced worldview, right, is understanding that there's no right or wrong way to do this, right? People that like Android aren't any different than people that like iOS, right? I don't hate Android. I just find that iOS works better for me. I don't hate Windows Phone. I use Windows Phone, and you know, that's one of the reasons I like. I wouldn't mind having one of everything. Is primarily because there's no right or wrong way to do something. So you know, having an Android device, an iOS device, and a Windows Phone device, or even a BlackBerry device, or what, you know, or I still have Symbian devices. You know, you want to go farther back than that, but. There's no right or wrong way to do any of this stuff, and having that balanced worldview that there are different ways of doing and existing. I think it's, you know, it's again that same dynamic of, you know, in having a balanced worldview. You know, there are some things that Android does better than iOS, and I'm not going to deny that. Those things don't matter to me, and I'm not going to say that, you know, if they matter to you, then you should use it, right? And that's, you know, what I've always told people about, you know, and even like the Mac versus PC and stuff. It's like, use whatever works best for you. There's no reason to use, you know, to pick one or the other, right? I mean, it's just, you know, it's just a thing, and it just does things a certain way, and if that works well for you, use it. But you know, the people that make a different choice than that, you shouldn't necessarily criticize them. What benefit do you have in doing that? I mean, that's a whole other dynamic.
Indeed, at the end of the day, technology is little more than a tool. So whether I choose to write my homework with a pen or whether I use a pencil doesn't really matter. The end result is the same. I did my work.
Yeah, exactly. It's, yeah, who cares if it was a, you know, fountain pen even, you know, right? I mean, it's just, then you're getting really nerdy. It's like, well, whatever. I mean, it's just a tool, and let's not criticize each other for the use of tools, or, you know, let's not criticize each other for even, you know, different beliefs, right? I mean, because that happens too, right? I mean, again, that plays itself out on app.net. I won't say regularly, but it does happen. It happens from time to time, but it happens everywhere too. At some point, it's like, let's learn to respect each other's point of view without making it personal, and without being, you know, douchebag about it, and, you know, a real douchebag versus just, you know, somebody who's nerdy about their, you know, their, who has a specific opinion. But it's, you know, having a specific opinion and excluding all other opinions, that's where I start having a problem.
As do I. All right, so let's move to the final section of this interview. And this is where we get to promote some of the people who we really enjoy following on app.net. And so let me ask you, who are three people on this network that you would recommend everybody follow?
Well, I think, you know, it's funny because I think it's hard to do that, because I would say that there are different people that I follow for different reasons, right? And that I enjoy the interactions with, because they bring, you know, sort of, you know, they represent different points of view, right? So I follow developers, I follow people in all over the world. I would like to see, you know, and this question I think you'd ask me, would you like to see more of an app.net? I'd actually like to see a more balanced worldview, right? Because I think right now that it's you know, it's very American/European centric view. It's great to see some people from Japan, right? Or Brazil, you know, and I think I see a guy from Brazil on there from time to time also. And so I know there's more parts of the world that are being missed, and it's because, you know, part of it is because the availability of apps and such makes it a challenge, and so they're on the higher end smartphone platforms and not so much, you know, it's very iOS weighted if you look at the number of apps. But just looking at my timeline right now as we're talking, people that may not have been mentioned in other podcasts. So there's a guy called Hawaii Boy who actually lives in Hawaii, and it's interesting because he's restarted his career. I think he worked in the restaurant business when I first started following him, and then he's moved on to working in an Apple reseller. Outside of Oahu, there are no official Apple stores because there's not a lot of people on those islands. And he happens to live in the big island in Kona, which is where I used to live. So I follow him just because he's in a part of the world that I'm familiar with. And I've had good conversations with him about, you know, geek stuff and such. There's also Jonathan Durig, who's a developer and has some, and you know, I've had some interesting conversations with him about, you know, things that aren't just necessarily geeky, and so I enjoy some of his stuff. And then there's a teenager I follow, Matthew M. Space, who I've had some interesting conversations with, and I think he finally just turned 18 this year, there's a wide variety of people there, is, you know, I mean, because I think you know, Hawaii Boy is in his 50s, and I don't know how old Jonathan Durig is, but you know, here's this young kid who, you know, I think he writes for an Android website. I don't know that I've read any of this stuff, but I've enjoyed the conversations I've had with him both on app.net and Twitter. And you know, for nothing else, right? Even if app.net goes away, I've made some connections to people here on app.net that I've taken other places. So that's one of the reasons I joined new social networks, you know, early, is because it widens the group of people that I can interact with. And I've, you know, I mean, I still follow people from Jaiku. And I don't know if you've ever played with Jaiku back in 2006, 2007. But there's still people I follow mostly on Twitter and maybe to a lesser extent on app.net that I've ran into primarily from Jaiku. So.
Well, thank you very much for taking the time to chat with me today and giving us the opportunity to learn more about you.
Yeah, well, you can learn more about me. I figured this question will come up. So you can go to phoneboy.com. This is where the home of my own podcast, Phoneboy Speaks. You can also, you know, follow me on Twitter and app.net as Phoneboy. I'm probably on Facebook and Google+ too. I use those to lesser degrees. I've got various other Phoneboy sites. I've got an InfoSec blog on phoneboy.net. I have a more personal blog on phoneboy.info, and I'm sure there's probably something else I'm missing, but if you Google the name Phoneboy, you'll probably find me. There you go.
All right, so it seems as though you've cornered the market on that name.
That's true. I'm waiting to get phoneboy.org, although I don't know why at this point. It's just kind of silly.
All right, well, have yourself a great day and enjoy your breakfast.
Eventually we'll go have it now. So yeah, thanks for taking the time to talk to me.
Bye for now. This concludes the fifth episode of Discover ADN. Once again, I would like to thank Damon for taking the time to chat with me. Show notes for today's episode can be found online at discoveradn.10centuries.com. That's the number 10, centuries.com. And I would also like to thank our sponsor for this episode, Born Sequel. Have a nice day.